When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, thank you guys for tuning into Performance Anxiety on the Pantheon Podcast Network. I am your host, Mark, and Sam Weber joins me today, literally from the road. He and his band had just finished the final show of their tour the night before, and Sam was driving all their gear home. So we began by discussing his family's love of music and how that had a big influence on him. In fact, his first band was him, his brother, and his father. But he also describes how architecture and Frank Lloyd Wright can be considered influences on him. Sam tells me how much he loves playing in a trio and how that makes it a lot easier for him to be improvisational. For years, he road tested all of his songs before committing them to tape. But that obviously wasn't possible during the pandemic. So his plans for another big album with lush production shifted 180 degrees. But he would prefer that we consider the new album Get Free a celebration of playing music together instead of watching Netflix. Check out samwebermusic.ca for social media links and ways to buy all of his music. Follow us at Performance ANX wherever media is social. And help us keep this show going by buying merch at performanceanx.threadless.com or ko-fi.com/performanceanxiety. Now, let's catch up with Sam Weber on Performance Anxiety on the Pantheon Podcast Network.
Okay. Hey, my name's Sam Weber, and you're listening to Performance Anxiety. I got a new record out called Get Free, and you can find it on my website, samwebermusic.ca. Thanks a lot.
What I like to do is to find out a little bit about your history, so maybe we can understand a little bit more about your latest releases. So, you know, find out where you've been to understand where you are.
Got it.
So that's kind of where I like to start. And I love getting stories that are maybe a little unusual, some stories from the road, interesting recording tidbits, behind-the-scenes stuff. So.
Got you.
So, I have done a bit of research. So, you're originally from Canada, and your father was an architect, right?
That's right.
All right. So, was there a lot of music growing up? Because architect doesn't necessarily translate into music. So, was there a lot of...
You wouldn't think. You wouldn't think so. But, like, he was, like... You know, this is something I've only learned about since he passed a lot. I've been learning a lot more about, like, Frank Lloyd Wright. And just kind of what his whole, he had like this whole kind of philosophy, like journeyman, Renaissance man kind of approach to his life. And like, this is Frank Lloyd Wright, his life and his, like, he had disciples that would come from far and wide to kind of learn from him. And so much of what his teachings were like a very balanced, like, I feel like it was a very balanced view of the world and art and everything. Like, and also too, like his architectural philosophy and how he approached building stuff was so emotional and deep. Like, even just, you know, a common Frank Lloyd Wright concept was the concept of like compression and release. Like, you walk in a house or you walk in a room or a building and the ceiling is low, and then you kind of emerge into this bigger space, and the effect that's created by is this emotional thing, you know? And I mean, like, so my dad was like, didn't go to school for architecture or anything. Like, he was a hockey player, musician, like he did kind of a bit of everything, you know, but he was connected to those concepts as well as like the nuts and bolts of like drawing houses and creating beautiful buildings and everything like that. He like, when he would play, like he wouldn't sit down at a piano and play Mary Had a Little Lamb or like try and learn like a classical piece. Like, he would really try and like connect with his emotions and channel something, you know, and is something that I never actively really picked up on that until I was much older, but it was something that was always around. Like, it was just always in the presence of that, like, emotional connection to an instrument. And wow. There's lots of music. Like, we played music together a lot when I was growing up, and my brother too, like, lots of music in the house and lots of support for all that. So that's kind of how that all coalesced, you know, with architecture.
So was he listening to, like, you mentioned some classical, was he listening to pop rock, or what was going on in the house that influenced you?
I mean, kind of a bit of everything. Like, I was pretty resentful of jazz, but now I'm like much more. Yeah. But now I'm like much more on the wavelength of like really finding beauty in it, and not so much. It's such an odd art form. It's almost like it's like expressionist or abstract, like painting or something. Like,
oh,
it's really,
yeah.
A lot of it is about the expression of it, which I find so beautiful now, and I have a palette for it. But it's like, when I was younger, like, I wanted to listen to Aerosmith.
Yes.
But we had like Neil Young in the house. We had like everything, you know, a bit of everything.
I've never heard anybody say they were resentful of jazz. So that's awesome.
It was that thing of like, you know, your parents, like, he kind of introduced you to that phase where he's like, everything I tell you, you're going to hate, you know? So like, whatever, yeah. Like, you're going to say it's stupid just because I like it.
Yep.
And that was true. And now, you know, years later, it's something I'm really interested in. If I'm going to put something on, it's probably some jazz infused music.
Oh, you know,
or
wow.
Like expressive music, reactionary music.
Oh, that's interesting. Was guitar the first instrument that you learned?
Piano was. I took piano lessons, and like similarly to like the structured approach, like, didn't work for me. Like, I really didn't know. I couldn't get sight reading music. Like, I can read music a little bit now, but I really only came to connect with music when I started playing guitar and like trying to play songs by ear, and then I took lessons from there. But
okay.
It was like a different path into music than reading off the page.
So how old were you when you started playing?
I was 6 when I took piano lessons, and I was about 12 when I started guitar and focusing on it.
Okay, and I believe that I read that the first band you were in was you, your brother, and your father?
Yeah, we were just like, I mean, it was not formalized in any capacity, but
okay.
We were just jamming in the living room. Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. It was awesome. We had like, my brother played piano. We had like a piano or like a keyboard set up, and then my dad's drums were set up, and then I would play guitar.
Oh,
we'd just jam all night.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome, man. After that, did you start playing in other bands, or did you immediately start just playing solo on your own?
I would play a lot by myself and try and make something, like make primitive recordings and try and make things that sounded musical, but like, I would play with people at school and, yeah, do the odd thing, you know, trying to like make something, do something with it, with
okay.
the musicality, you know, that was kind of focused or, you know, concrete.
So when did you actually start gigging?
I think I was 16. I started playing at I started doing open mics probably when I was like 15.
Oh, okay.
And then kind of got into just playing around town, which where I'm from, which was like Victoria. From there, like, I would start playing like bar gigs or like cover gigs at bars, you know. Like, I'm from Victoria, BC, so there's lots of like cover music that happens there, so I'd play in those bands.
Okay.
For tourists and that kind of thing. And then there's also a good other original music scene there that I would, you know, have bands and we play shows at bars, whatever.
Oh, cool. When did you start writing your own music?
Pretty soon after I picked up the guitar. I mean, I would start writing. Lyrics kind of came later, but I would kind of start writing like little instrumental. I'd start coming up with little things, like little instrumental ideas.
Okay. Oh, and when you were out gigging, and you said you know, you're doing a lot of cover stuff, but when did you start playing your own music? I mean, was that a little nerve-wracking for you to go up there and just start playing your own stuff?
Yeah, I can't even remember the first time. I don't even know what the first time was when I like played my I played a song of mine, you know. It's odd. That's odd to think about. It might have not been until I had a band like with high school friends that was like I would play with people from my music school at gigs, and then I had like a band in high school of like two friends, and we kind of started playing music together and started recording, getting music together. And that was probably the first time I was like contributing my own songs. I was, you know,
Okay. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Without a healthy mind, being truly happy and at peace is hard. The good news is therapy works. But what is therapy exactly? It's whatever you want it to be. Maybe you're not feeling motivated right now and would like some tools to help. Or maybe you're feeling insecure in relationships or at work, not dealing well with the stress. Whatever you need, it's time to stop being ashamed of normal human struggles and start feeling better because you deserve to be happy. And now you don't have to worry about finding an in-person therapist near you to help. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can start communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours. Try doing that in person. So join the millions of people who are seeing what online therapy is really about. It's always a good time to invest in yourself because you are your greatest asset. And a special offer to Performance Anxiety listeners, you can get 10% off your first month of professional therapy at betterhelp.com/performanceanxiety. That's betterhelp.com/performanceanxiety. Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring this podcast. I'm getting the feeling that you gigged a lot. You've been on the road a lot. Is that the case? I mean, it sounds, I mean, the music, all the music sounds like it's been written on the road. Like it's just road worn music.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've played, like, that's always been like, my first like manager kind of figure in my life was a guy that had played in bands and like had always kind of like mandated, like, if you just get out and play, like that is the best surefire way to kind of just keep getting better, first of all, and just like keep building your thing, you know, your vision or whatever it is professionally and creatively. It's just like, that's the way to do it. And that's been true to my experience. Like, and I kind of took that to heart, and it helps that I love it so much. Like, I really love traveling and I really do love making music with my friends and all that. And I really took that to heart, and that's been like a cornerstone of my whole thing, and has informed, like, of course, like you mentioned, like it informs a lot of the material I write about, because it's kind of just my reality. So it's like, yeah, like playing shows is been like, and you know, it's a funny thing. It's like, it's this thing that you can do as a performer. It's like, or at least historically, it's been the thing you can do as a performer. And it's like, I've always seen like a steady kind of growth from like small things to like slightly bigger things, but like microscopically bigger. And it's just kind of been this slow incline of like things kind of getting better, changing and evolving.
Oh.
And then every once in a while, some kind of little break will happen. Like so-and-so will like share my song to their followers or their fans and like ask me to open for them. And I'll be like, oh, and then I'll kind of like have a boon to my exposure or whatever it is.
But oh, like, that's awesome.
Otherwise, it's just like investing in that like consistent of just like practice of just going out and playing shows and connecting with music has been my whole thing.
Jeez, how many shows would you say you play a year then? Just as like an average.
A year?
Yeah.
I mean, the past couple have been obviously much less. But like In the before times, it was probably up like over 100 for sure.
Wow. Like,
yeah.
Man.
Lots of stuff.
Oh, man. And are you doing everything yourself? The booking and then the travel arrangements and everything? Is that just you?
I did that for a long time, but luckily I have folks that help me with all that stuff now.
Oh, good. Good. I imagine that's got to get tough.
It's a lot, you know, and even like, I mean, we tour without a tour manager to keep costs down. Like a lot of bands will like tour with like a dedicated person that just books hotels, like finds the place to eat, make sure you get to the show on time.
Right.
And we kind of all, me and the other two guys that play with me, we all kind of share those hats. And I kind of tend to do most of that. So even that, you know, unto itself is like a big job. And it can be hard to juggle that with like booking all the shows and You know, all the other logistics, like the financials, like all of it. It's just so, it's a lot of work.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a full-time job.
Yeah, yeah, totally. But it, luckily, it like it serves, you know, it's such a joyous thing that we get to do. So I kind of take it as just the cost of doing business, just spending time that way.
Oh, that's a great way to look at it, though. So what did your family think about this as you're just, because your dad, you know, she said your dad kind of had a whole lot of things going on, but as, you know, he was an architect, so were they supportive of you going out on the road and being a musician as a living?
Yeah, you know, I think it started as like blind support, like just like totally just like do whatever you want. Like, this is, if you're passionate about it, you got to do it. Like,
right.
And that was like essential, I think, you know, to get going. And then I think it kind of transitioned into like they kind of formed an understanding of what I was trying to do and certain kind of milestones, like career milestones that I hit, like certain shows that I played or certain radio stations that would play my music, like those kind of things kind of informed, like, they're like, okay, I kind of understand what you're trying to do now. And I kind of see what you're after. Oh, and wow. Also like another huge thing about, I mean, specifically to the, you know, back to the driving around, playing lots of shows thing. It's like, I get to like consistently visit family and friends, like everywhere, and kind of check in all these people, and like doing what I do is like, you know, sometimes we lose touch with people. Like, if we don't like put in a diligent effort, it's so easy to lose touch with like friends and family that don't live within your close proximity. But like getting to play music is this blessed thing where you like kind of are like checking in on all these people and maintaining. It's much easier in a way to maintain all these relationships and all these like points of contact with all these different people everywhere. It's kind of really beautiful in that regard.
You know? Oh, that's really cool. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah. I mean, you're driving around anyway, you know, and then you just get to kind of drop in on all these people, and sometimes they come out to your show. Sometimes they don't, whatever, but
you
get to kind of visit. You know?
Oh, that is awesome. How long were you gigging and on the road for before you started to think about recording your first album, Shadows in the Road?
I think I put that record out. Well, that record was like the beginning of me touring solo. Like I was touring as a sideman in other bands before then. Like,
oh, okay.
I did some kind of like larger scale tours. Like I did one like larger scale tour as a guitar player, keyboardist in a Canadian band, and then I transitioned into just kind of trying to build that thing.
Oh, okay.
After that.
How did you, well, I guess you were writing on the on your own time then, and
writing and recording. I think I started that record when I was in like my last couple of years of high school, and then kind of put it out.
Oh, wow.
After high school and hit it after that. Yeah,
that's really cool. I was listening to it, and I gotta say, I love the feel of Something to Say, but I think I really like the late 60s pop feel to Rolling.
Sleeps well, my darling, or tomorrow's on the train. He's coming down the line to take us both away. Somewhere better you will see, somewhere we can finally be alone. Amid so many promises that I will try and keep.
It's got almost like and some people might take this the wrong way. I don't know how you feel about these guys, but it's got like a Monkees feel to it. I love the Monkees.
Interesting. That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah, it's so funny. Yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, it's like that music, it's so odd to reflect on. Like, it's been so long since that, like, I must have made that record or finished that record like 10 years ago. So it's so, like, I don't really listen, I don't go back much, you know, like, I don't like to listen to my own stuff.
Oh, yeah, imagine,
really,
yeah.
Once it's out, you know, but it's like, it's interesting to reflect on it and hear that feedback and think about it in that light based on my memory of it. I totally get that Monkees thing for sure.
Well, it's cool. I mean, it's got a bunch of different sounds to it, but that's the one that really hit me, and it's, it's like the, you know, the later, like the 67, 68 head era Monkees. It's just That's really good stuff. And it's got the whole album.
Thanks, man.
That album and Valentina Nevada, Everything Comes True, they all have this great, like, 70s singer-songwriter feel to them. Like, I tend to think in, like, combinations of things, because everybody's got their own sound. And I don't like saying, oh, you sound like this person, because nobody sounds exactly like somebody else. But the feel I'm getting, the sound I'm getting through the harmonies, the chorus, and the music is kind of like a Jackson Brown meets Andy Schaaf. And it's a really interesting combination. I really like it.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I mean, the 70s singer-songwriter influence is so, like, is so strong. Like, I'm a massive Jackson fan. A fan of all of those artists, you know. But I will say, like, in recent years, like, I mean, since moving to LA, like, I, like, it's not, like, in any negative sense, but, like, I sort of, like, saw kind of, like, how that music, I kind of learned so much more about how it exists and, like, got so immersed in it that, like, I kind of, like, shocked myself out of, like, because I was, like, I feel like for so much of my career, I was, like, trying to make music that sounded that way, you know, just because I loved it so much. And I think, like, I've been trying to redirect and, like, thinking more, like, what, or, like, I don't know, like, find something newer to what I'm, like, that is, like, less familiar. Like, I feel like for so long I was trying to drive at something familiar. I'm less, like, interested in that these days.
Well, I can definitely hear that that's what happened on the new album, because there is less of a singer-songwriter feel to it. It's definitely different than your previous work. But I do have a question. So 2 years after Shadows in the Road came out, Valentina Nevada came out. Was that another, like, a road-influenced album? Was all that written while you're on the road? Because, I mean, again, like I had mentioned earlier, the songs sound like they're definitely road-weary songs. Not weary, but road-worn songs. Like, they've been played a lot. I mean, were you playing them live before you recorded them?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, that's, I mean, that's kind of the advent of, like, being a new artist. Like, you do have to go out and play your record that's out, but, like, if people don't know who you are, you can kind of get away with playing whatever you want,
right?
You know, like, to a degree, you can kind of just, like, so, like, we would do that. Like, we would go out, you know, when we were touring Shadows that are, we'd go out and play Valentina songs.
Maria owed some money to some cat down in El Paso. Valentina caught the bill. Maria caught a bullet for her gambling. The dirty hills and hideaways, the dust bowl she harks, with a fire behind her eyes, a 45 in the glove box. Valentina.
And just, like, and that would kind of inform how the songs would be recorded. And, like, just that whole, that is, I mean, in the music world, that's referred to as, like, road testing. Like, you go out and you, like, play them for people. It's like a comedian getting up and telling jokes and trying them out on a small,
right,
at a small club to see, like, what the reaction is. Like, it's almost like until you get up and do that on a stage, it's like there's something. Yeah, you can really learn something from doing that about the song and about, like, the effectiveness of the arrangement and just, like, the delivery, the message and the feeling and the dynamic, all of it. Like, you can learn so much. So we would do that a ton.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Hey, guys, I want to talk to you about socks for a second. Why not? It's a music podcast. But I tried a pair of socks from Boldfoot and love them. I've only worn them once because my kids have stolen them. So in my household, that's the best endorsement I can give. And I guess it's fitting because the design I chose was jailbait. Wait, jailbird. The design I chose was jailbird. I might keep that in. The socks are 100% American made and 5% of all proceeds go to veteran charities. It makes sense seeing that Boldfoot is a family and veteran owned company. They have a huge variety of styles. So check out boldfoot.com and buy some of the best socks you've ever slapped on your feet. And help veterans while you're at it. That's boldfoot.com. When you go in to record the songs, is it you, or is it an entire band? Are you touring with an entire band, or are you playing solo?
Yeah, I tour as a trio. I really love like the trio, like the trio setup, because it's mm-hmm. it's perfect in that like there's enough. There's like three elements that can be like totally in their own lane, and the trio arrangement is like kind of like it can kind of be like a bit. I've seen it delivered fairly like in effect, or like executed fairly ineffectively. Like if you go out as a trio and try and just like try and like play loud and fill space, like mm-hmm. I usually find that like unpleasant, you know, to listen to or to do. Like it just kind of feels like it's missing something. But like if you work with the dynamics of people playing off each other and really respond to each other, there's lots of room to like be expressive and reactive as a band. Like it's a really unique number. It's something, it's weird to say, but it's like a unique number of something unique to having three people on stage.
Okay.
Doing that and like having space and like, yeah, creating space.
I think you just nailed it. Creating space. That's hard to do when you've got like two or three guitars on stage and, you know, a bass player and a drummer and a sing, you know, if you've got one guitar, one bass, one drum, you've got a lot more maneuverability, like you said, space that you can play in.
Definitely. And like, I think like you can definitely, I think a lot of outfits, like they want to sound, if I'll put it this way, like the more people you add, the more, it's almost like the more planning you have to do.
Okay.
You know, like the more arranging has to happen. Like when you play with the less people you play with, it's like the less things you have to pay attention to, and the easier it is to almost like improvise
things. Wow.
Like when we go out and play, it's like we try and like catch we try and play songs like a little different all the time, like different tempos, different feels,
oh, cool.
different chord changes. Like it's fun to try. It's fun, and it's like what keeps it fun and exciting for us ultimately is what I think keeps it exciting for an audience. Like we talk about this so much because it's like some people like they have it, they basically have like a show, like they have an act, like they go up, the banter might be the same, the songs are played to a click at the same tempo, and that's like, there's nothing wrong with that. But like what I love about what I get to do is that it's like this reactive experience that I get to share with my friends. Like they play something, I hear what they're playing and I respond to it and try and play something that sounds good
based
on what they play. You know, you get to be, and like every room sounds different, you know,
that's
every night
true.
Your guitar sounds different. So it's like just to try and be present in that thing is really what I'm about. Like I try and live in that. So,
that is awesome.
It's a lot of fun.
I was listening to Valentina Nevada, Nevada. I'm going to get emails from people from Nevada saying you're saying it wrong. But I love Charlotte, but I really love The Heat. I think that is a great
sound.
That's that one in particular that makes me think of that whole Jackson Browne meets Andy Schauf sound. It's just that, I think that's my favorite track off of that album.
If she was born to run, I was born to chase her. I didn't know that I wanted it, babe. I'm more than likely to spurn a frown. If history rolls back around, I'll be looking for reasons to cut my honey down.
Yeah, that's an apt comparison, Jackson, Andy. Thanks, man. Yeah, I like that one too.
Okay.
You know, but like, I'll take that song for example. Like, that one was, for some reason, it was always so hard to exit. It always felt so hard to execute it live. Like, I don't know if it was just my neuroses or what, but it was like, it was always like, I never just felt comfortable just like, because it was more part driven. Like there was like a guitar riff and there was like a specific guitar riff, mm-hmm. like a specific tempo. Like I never really felt like we could get it live. So I all the songs that I really love to play live are like usually permutations of like the recordings. Like they're not even like the same arrangements.
You know? Do you have any that you just don't play live that are just too difficult, or is everything basically playable?
I mean, now, like the new record, we play pretty much everything. But yeah, there's a handful of songs off every record before that I just like, that I just have tried and like just don't like, because it doesn't feel like it comes across right, or like in a way that feels good, you know. And I mean, maybe that's a position of, I mean, and it's not for lack of trying, like definitely trying to make all these songs work. But it's like, I think nowadays my latest thing is like coming for, if like the work, basically starting a recording, like having a more like a live sound on the record, or a live recording process with like a live band. Like Get Free, we did overdubs, but like the nucleus of the recordings are like a live recording,
okay,
a live band recording of three people, you know. So like, and it felt good, like we got takes that we really liked, like with just three people. And if we could do that, I think that translates to mean later on, like we could do it on a stage that way too. Okay. And it's really important to me, it's become more important to me that I'm able to do that, that the songs are good enough that you can record them like with like a smaller outfit and still be able to deliver them live and make it sound good.
So in 2019, Everything Comes True came out, and the songs sound a little different from the first two. Did you approach writing or recording them differently?
Yeah, I mean, that record we did at United Studios in Hollywood, like that was a, like it was the biggest probably swing. Like I had like these really grand songs and grand ideas, and I wanted to work with a producer, like a named producer,
right?
And really kind of like go for it. And that was like, I think that, and the producer really helped arrange the songs and was really formative. That was a guy named Tyler Chester. He's a friend and a brilliant producer and all that. And I think that was like, the fidelity was obviously like a lot higher because of where we were recording. And it was also like that record's all recorded live too. Like it was just a bunch of people playing together. Like it's like nine people playing together at some time.
Wow.
Together and just really just going for it. So that was different. I mean, the most we'd done live before that was like tracking, you know, drums and bass together or something. Like it was a lot less live.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense though, because it sounds bigger and I guess grander maybe.
Yeah, I mean, those studios they're famous for a reason, you know. Like they sound like United and Ocean, like Ocean Way, I mean Sunset Studio, like all those East West, those big LA studios, like they're legendary, you know. They're awesome zones.
Yeah,
for a reason.
I guess for as an example of the song sounding a little bit different, like It's All Happening definitely sounds bigger than the other albums, and Probably Not is probably for sure my favorite off that album. Traffic was amazing down here with the lights have turned to red. The air is clearer than the paper said. I've been reading for you. Should I be glad to leave you and soon the melting pot? Maybe California will take pity on the dream. That song paints just a great picture.
Thanks, man.
And this is the time I think you lose your father at that point.
Yeah, that was like, it was kind of during the recording of that, like he had cancer. So it was kind of during the recording of that record that his health really started to, and like writing it, like that whole process was kind of like combined with him passing away effectively.
Right.
And it was the kind of cancer that was like long, it was a slow, long process. And
man, I'm so sorry.
I mean, it's okay. I mean, you know, it's just the way, it's the way it went. And I mean, he didn't suffer a ton at the end, and it's just grateful to have had him for as long as possible. It was great. But
I'm sure that had to have an effect on the writing or the production of the album.
Yeah. I mean, I was in a really like raw emotional place for sure. And I think I wrote some of my songs for Everything Comes True are like some of my favorite songs I've written. Like I was also taking like a really big swing on like getting like a big LA band together. Like we recorded with some of Jackson's band and like,
oh wow,
we, yeah, and like, you know, at the studio where they made like Hail to the Thief and like Ray Charles,
man,
did string session. Like it was like just a big ambitious project. So I felt that pressure combined with just like, you know, a lot of going through a lot of personal stuff. And yeah.
But at this time, were you still living in Canada or had you moved to LA at that point?
I was back and forth a lot. Like I was, I still do. And like, I have always loved the music from LA, but I was really obsessed with the LA music scene at that time. And like the new music as well, coming out of LA, as well as like the music of the past, but like a lot of the new music happening there, I was really excited about.
The hair metal scene?
So I was, yeah, exactly.
Poison is just amazing.
Motley Crue, Poison, yeah.
I can hear that in the work, I got to tell you.
I know, it's really obvious.
It's really
obviously there.
You really need to tone that down a bit. You might get sued.
I'll work on that. Yeah.
But okay, so you ended up moving to LA. Is that when you started writing the new album, Get Free?
Let me think. Yeah, like Get Free, again, like a lot. Some of the songs kind of were written like on the road. Like, mm-hmm. You know, it was a straight up pandemic recording. Like it was very like not road song. Or not like I would have had no reason to be getting road material right. for that record like during a pandemic, like when I was just at home. So a lot of the songs are like old. There's a few kind of newbies on there. I'd have to think about it to think when they were all written, but like yeah, a lot of them were kind of like written as I was traveling, like heading into that phase. And I had a similar plan. Like I had another ambitious kind of studio record plotted out at a different recording studio, but like with other, you know, musicians that I really looked up to and were big in the scene. And then the pandemic came along and kind of just changed the whole board. Cause I no longer could really get in the studio with people and do that. So I just kind of looked to what my partner is like a very talented musician. Mm-hmm. So she and I kind of like, we're just like, well, there's no reason we can't like take a swing at this just at our house.
Wow.
And just see what happens. And we went for it. And that's kind of what the record is. It's just us and our friend Danny playing drums that he would, as soon as we were able to like have one more person in our pod or whatever, they were, you know, like, that was when he was kind of coming over and we were celebrating, just playing music together. Like that's what this record is to me. It's just like a celebration of playing music together.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, you mentioned that some of the songs were older songs. Did the having to record in the pandemic era, did that change any of the songs?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I like changed the subject matter or anything like that. But I mean, like, I think it was just in the execution. Like, I mean, I think some songs that, some of them were like lemons from like, or not lemons, but things that were kind of unfinished that I then finished.
Okay.
And then getting to like perform them in the environment of like being just so happy to see it, like to be playing music with people and like doing something other than watching Netflix for like a second was like, so it allowed us to push the songs as far as they could go, like in that context, you know? So I think we got a lot out of the material. And that kind of is how they changed. Does that make sense?
Yeah. They kind of grew. You didn't really change the content of it, but they matured, I guess, maybe.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
Did it change how you write in general? In general terms? Because you're saying that a lot of your stuff is written on the road, but, you know, almost 2 years you couldn't be on the road.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't honestly, like, I kind of like took a bit of a sabbatical from writing. Like I didn't write a whole lot during the pandemic. It just didn't feel, and especially with all, you know, with all of the things going on in the world, it's like, I'm the kind of songwriter that I'm good at like looking back and reflecting on things and kind of piecing together feelings. And that's like a very, and also like a very like therapeutic process for me. It's like kind of a way of dealing with stuff and figuring stuff out in my head. And I think there was so much in flux and so much left unresolved, like in the world, and so many things happening. And I still feel this way to a degree. It's like hard. It became increasingly hard to like find a singular truth of the moment or something that felt true in the moment under those circumstances. It was just something I really look for when I'm writing.
Okay. Is there something behind the album title, Get Free?
It was just kind of like trying to feel free from the spot we were in with the whole, like, it, less so than the physical space of being locked down in an apartment, like just the psychological space of being locked down in an apartment. Like,
okay, yeah.
And I mean, the songs aren't really about that, but it's like necessarily, but like the performances are about that to me, like being just like getting, escaping, like almost in the sense you'd escape in your imagination, but like escaping with your, through your emotion, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it also sounds like you'd mentioned before, you kind of escaped that 70s singer songwriter sound that you had been using, because the songs get more experimental. There's some really cool stuff going on in there. So, like Truth or Lie. I mean, there is this weird string scraping thing going on that's kind of like phasey, or it's just really wild. And then there's this big bass rumble underneath, which is just really cool.
It all comes to life, how you feel. I can't keep a secret, babe, but I'll make you a deal. When it all comes to life, oh.
Thanks, man. Yeah, thanks for listening so attentively. Exactly that as well. Like, it was like trying to get outside of being pigeonholed as like a throw. Like, I don't think of myself as a throwback artist. I just try and make music that I like.
Yeah.
And I think like I was reflecting on my material and being like, okay, I'm trying to move into a space where I'm trying to find some, I think my taste changed a lot, and therefore my direction changed a lot with what I wanted to do. And I was trying to get out of where I was, you know.
That makes a lot of sense, man. That definitely makes a lot of sense. I'm also intrigued by Don't Cry For Me, because it's a really great song, but it sounds like there's somebody washing the dishes in the background. Which
there literally is somebody washing the dishes in the background. Good ear.
It's, I love it.
I was doing vocal takes with we would do the band takes, and it was like our whole ritual. Like, we would do the band takes and we'd do a few songs, Danny, Mallory, me. And then I would do like a pass where I would simultaneously play bass guitar and sing and try and and record those things at the same time.
Okay.
And like during while we were doing that song, they were doing the dish or like cleaning up after dinner or something. So there's like, there was some bleed into the tracks from that, but it kind of was just this ambient percussive. It just felt like this ambient percussive thing that I heard once and it sounded right. So it's like, it's got to stay, you know. It's
I
like,
love why it.
Take it away, you know.
I love it. It's kind of sounds like it's a live recording.
Crown without a proper king. Funeral dove I never knew that it could sing over classic love without a ring. Slow dancing in a long lace gown. Don't cry for her, she's halfway gone. Wasted her youth trying to make sense to you.
Yeah.
Like you're at a little club or something and you're playing to a bar and it's an active bar. It's really,
totally.
Really
like
cool.
Glasses clinking together.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Little bit of music concrète.
Exactly.
The way the album ends though is really, really cool. Streets of LA.
Yeah.
Ends with, and this is just not a musician, untrained ear, but it sounds kind of like an homage to One of These Days by Pink Floyd. ¶¶
Okay, I don't even know that. I'm not even supremely familiar with that song. I'm bad with the song titles. I'm sure I've heard it, but now I have to listen to that. That's really interesting.
The bass on the way it ends, it's really reminiscent of One of These Days by Pink Floyd off their Metal album, M-E-D-D-L-E. That,
dang.
And that's one of my favorite Floyd songs. So I thought that was just the coolest thing ever.
Wow. Okay, I got to listen to that tune. I got to listen to that record, I think. I don't even know if I'm like supremely familiar with
that's one of my
Pink Floyd's.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite Floyd albums. There's like five songs, and the second side is one song. It's Echoes, and it's like 25 minutes long.
Whoa.
Yeah, it starts off with One of These Days, and it's got whatever effect you're doing on that bass, that it has a similar effect on that, and it's just the coolest sound ever.
Yeah, that's cool, man. I'm so excited to hear that. You know, I love having these reasons to dip. I love having these like purposeful reasons to like dip back into older, lack of a better word, older music. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, cause it's such like, there's so much out there and there's so much incredible stuff. So it's great to have like a line in into like reason to go back specifically to like listen with purpose, you know? Thank you.
Exactly. And you know, you almost like with fresh ears.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you're currently back on the road now. And how long are you out for?
We just ended last night. We played Boston.
Oh, cool.
We played Cambridge. It was great. It was a great show. And then, I'm hauling it back to Los Angeles by myself. The band, wow. Tages, the bass player, is going to produce a record with, or work on a record with Junico,
cool.
Which is a great band from LA, and then in upstate New York. And then Danny's going back to Vermont eventually because he's house sitting up there, and it's like this big, we stayed at this house. It's like this big old, country house out there, and he makes music out there, and it's great. So we're all
awesome.
Kind of scattered to the wind.
You going to be working on new music, or are you just kind of laying low for a little while until you hit the road again?
Probably a bit of both. I've got some new stuff that I'm working through. I've got a few things that I've kind of recorded and have been tinkering with, and I think I'll probably just keep trying to do that. I mean, I've got like a lot of just like my partner, Mal and me are like moving in, I guess we're moving in April.
Okay.
Or like near the end of April. And then and then I'm kind of like scattered to the wind again. So it's just a bit of everything for the next little while. And then honestly, the summer is pretty open. So I'm hoping some creativity can really take root around then.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Well, man, this has been a blast. I've really enjoyed the album. I've also enjoyed going back and listening to the previous albums and hearing the progression, because it's a really interesting progression going from sparser music to more heavier produced stuff. But you never get to the point where it sounds like it's overproduced. I mean, it sounds like you can pull it off live. So I really like the very tasteful production that you have in the last couple albums. It's not easy to do.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I really appreciate that. I think early on, not that they're bad records or anything, but like, I think I was using production as like a writing tool and like a bit of a crutch, like, you know, and like, as I kind of went on, I was getting better at figuring out how to make a song really stand on its two feet live. Mm-hmm. And then that'll like, if you can do that, you can deliver a song with less stuff. And for me, in my preference, I really do find the adagio of like less is more to be really true. Like if you can deliver something, if you can serve it or like cook a dish with like great ingredients, simple recipe, it's like those are the best meals, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Those are the best songs, you know, a great vocal performance or a great chorus, or you know, it's just like having just real, and then having the other elements just support versus like distract, and like let the distraction kind of be the thing, you know.
Exactly. And you know, it's a credit to you being on the road so much. It, you know, it really reflects in how your songwriting has grown. So it's really a credit to your tenacity on the road, and the results on the songwriting are just fantastic.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, I mean, tenacity is a very nice word for it. I think I'm just really lucky. I really love what I do, and I get to do it a whole lot. And it's like, it's just a total blessing for what I, for on my part. So it's easy to want to, it's easy to be tenacious, I guess.
Yeah. If you like what you're doing, it is easy to be tenacious.
Yeah.
So, how can people pick up the new album, get free, and how can they follow you on social media and find out when you're hitting the road again?
It's all on my website, samwebermusic.com. And I have a mailing list up there. I'm trying to, like, I think the future for independent music and musicians is really just for people to get on mailing lists for bands they like and just to bypass social media stuff as much as possible. But I mean, I'm also on all the social media platforms as well, like Instagram, Facebook, and all that. And, but yeah, I love to connect with people who appreciate the tunes, and we love to play them and to run, and there's updates on there about what we're doing. So yeah.
Oh, good. So everything's on the website, and is there links to buy the album on the website too, I would imagine?
All that stuff's up there, yeah.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for spending so much time with me. I know I've kept you a while here. I really do appreciate it. It's been a blast talking with you and learning about your process.
Likewise, Mark. Thank you so much for taking the time, and like, I really appreciate all your enthusiasm for what I'm up to. It means a lot to get that. So thank you.
Rolled up my blue jeans into the bag. Rings around my eyelids beginning to sag. Lean out the window and you take a drag. I've enjoyed staying, now I must grow. Drum up a lifestyle, bet on a hunch. I was quiet, one of my bunch.